Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Lindsay Hughley, and joining me today is Kathy Kraniger. Kathy is the president and CEO of the Florida Bankers Association. And prior to joining FBA, Kathy has a distinguished public sector career, appointed by four presidents to government posts and confirmed by the U.S. Senate. Kathy has been a trusted counselor and advisor to cabinet members, members of Congress of both parties for decades, focused on problem solving over politics and outcomes over credit. As director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau from December 2018 to January 2021, Kathy made her mark on all aspects of the agency's missions and operations, particularly in facilitating innovation and leading through the economic uncertainty of the global pandemic. In that role, Kathy has also served as the board of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the Financial Stability Oversight Board, and as chair of the Federal Financial Institutions Examinations Council. Kathy's government service included senior roles of the Department of Transportation and Homeland Security, in the Office and Management and Budget, and in the U.S. Senate and the House of Representatives. She's also served as a U.S. Peace Corps volunteer in Ukraine. Kathy graduated magna cum laude from Marquette University, earned a law degree from Georgetown University Law Center, and is a member of the Pennsylvania and D.C. bars. She serves on the board of Habitat for Humanity Florida, the finance committee of her parish in Tallahassee, and the Milken Institute's FinTech Advisory Council, in addition to other community engagements. Welcome, Kathy. We are so honored to have you here today. And here at Banking Matters, we always like to start off with finding out how our guests got their start in banking.
Well, thank you so much, Lindsay, for having me. It is truly a pleasure to be here. I do love talking about compliance. As you noted, a public sector career is really where the bulk of my career has been. So over two decades in Washington, D.C. And during that time, as you think about banking issues, it was really about critical infrastructure and cybersecurity. So as you noted, my federal career did have a national security, homeland security basis to it. So when I first started meeting with bankers and talking to them about public policy issues, it was from that lens. I was at the Department of Homeland Security. We were dealing with a lot of different dynamics, working with Treasury, working with Justice, and looking across the board at the things that were facing our nation in terms of how can we do these things differently. And the financial services sector was ahead, as you would imagine, and as you would hope, because the job, of course, is protecting people's money. So that is a pretty critical piece of our infrastructure and in private sector hands appropriately also. So understanding that role in government, working with the private sector and recognizing all the capabilities that the banks bring to bear, that was my first engagement really with bankers from that level. And then moving through my career at the Office of Management and Budget, I had responsibility for Treasury, financial services, independent agencies, HUD. I dealt with a lot of housing finance issues at that time too. So there was a natural segue of all of that engagement with the banking industry to the CFPB, where I actually had the role of being a regulator. So this is my first private sector role that really brings me into the banking orbit, but having really that tremendous honor of representing our bankers operating in Florida. I am loving the job. I've been here a little more than a year.
So what would you say was the biggest difference between coming from the public sector into the more private sector with banks?
Well, from my standpoint, taking this job at the Florida Bankers Association was really an opportunity to dig into and understand better the economics of banking, understand, you know, how banks actually make money to support their employee base, and then to be able to, you know, serve their customers, serve their communities, lend back. And that is one of the things that I have most enjoyed digging into and understanding. I think it's important. We need that robust banking sector in our nation to make our economy move. So that has been a very interesting facet. One of the things that's been the biggest surprise to me on that front is that fewer and fewer community banks in this country are consumer or retail banks. They're really commercial banks. And then that becomes, again, a huge aspect of small business lending and small business support and activity in their communities.
Absolutely. And like most of our listeners here at Banking Matters, and especially the banks that we work with through Compliance Alliance, they're majority community banks. And that's where my experience has always lied. And so I'm curious to see, now that you've kind of, you've been so involved in the tide that regulations have been going with, and kind of leading that front. Do you see gaps between the regulations and what you've heard from your member banks, what their needs are? What do those gaps look like that you've been able to identify?
One of the areas that I think is just a fundamental challenge for the government and rightfully for the law. I mean, you think about it, law just continues to pile on top of law, and the recognition when a new law is written of the fact that there might actually already be a mandate or requirement that may intertwine with that, that may frankly conflict with that, whether it's the regulation inside the agencies, whether it's the regulation of another agency that touches on it. We have the opportunity, I think, today to be trying to think about this differently, because continuing to pile new requirements on top of institutions that are tying their hands and their ability to support their customers, it's just an unacceptable outcome. Look, consumers' expectations have changed. They expect to be able to, you know, perform the transactions they want seamlessly, easily. They want, you know, their financial institutions that they work with to be able to communicate with each other in the same manner. And there are a lot of, in some cases legitimate, in other cases bureaucratic, barriers to that seamless engagement. And I think we've come to a point where one of the biggest challenges on that front is actually not the institutions themselves, it's the government. And the government's ability to understand that and to move to something that's going to make a lot more sense. Again, we absolutely need to maintain privacy protections. Cybersecurity, I mentioned already once, I'm sure we'll talk about it again. So the security of that information and the security of people's money. I mean, again, we're talking about money, so it is critically important. However, all of these other dynamics of, you know, how things come about, what data institutions have to collect, how they have to collect it, how they have to maintain it and report it. There's a lot of data that's actually going back and forth between the institutions and government. What is shown publicly, how that's analyzed. Again, it's a lot of requirements, and you don't want institutions stepping back and just checking the box on those things, much less the government examiners coming in and checking the box on these things. What is the relationship between those data collections and actual risk? How do we think about and understand actual risk? How do we quantify and mitigate that risk? Those are the kinds of things that are questions to ask and really dig into and think about the best way to transition from where we are now to where we want to be. And that's an exciting conversation to have. It was one inside government, and now, again, being outside government, talking about that as we look at, you know, a big transition that's happening at the federal level, there's an opportunity, again, to really examine some of these things and think about how we position our country best for the future.
Absolutely. And so since you bring that up, I really would love to kind of hear what are you expecting over these next 4 years as the tide shifts a little bit, but what are you expecting as far as changes? Where do you think the focuses are going to lie from a regulatory standpoint?
So there's a lot to pull apart on this. I think there, I would like to see, again, a very concerted policy direction going forward that's a little more unified, pulling agencies together and saying, okay, let's understand how all of these things actually affect the private sector and therefore affect customers and consumers and the public, and think about it in a cohesive way. Having you know, the Department of Labor and the FTC and the FCC, not your typical prudential regulators, much less not the CFPB or state financial regulators, all of these other agencies that are levying requirements and regulations on business that do affect banks and affect banking. And so trying to think about what makes sense there to make this a little more unified. And, you know, again, it's all cost. That all takes focus away. It may be important, obviously, on one level and some minor piece. But again, looking holistically, where does that fit into the economy we want to have, the opportunities we want to provide to people? And so, you know, that's part of this. It's just been the last 4 years, but really it has been a trajectory, just the sheer volume of regulation. We've been calling it the regulatory tsunami, and it really is just thousands and thousands of pages that, you know, does that actually get us anywhere? And so what I certainly expect to see, and many of us expect to see, is a reversal of that attitude, a reversal of that piling on, a reversal of that, just again, sheer volume to something that's going to make sense, something that's going to position us better for the future. And look, I support deregulation. I supported it when I was in government, but it's not deregulation for its own sake. It's, again, addressing some of the burden to say, okay, why is this important? And is the regulation actually achieving the outcome? So worth talking for a moment about things like Community Reinvestment Act and 1071 and HMDA. Those things are all really very specific data requirements, but it's aimed to try to get you at the notion that communities, that banks need to be supporting their communities and supporting opportunity. Well, what is the best way to do that? And getting into check the box exercises in a digital world that is trying to impose that on a physical, you know, physical footprint, it just doesn't make sense anymore. It doesn't make sense anymore. So what is the standard by which we should be thinking about this? And same with the enforcement side, setting clear rules of the road around what fair lending, you know, expectations are. It's really an opportunity, I think, to take this all to the next level. And you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, but there is, I think, a lot of hope for kind of a rational and smart path forward that's going to be great for consumers and the American people and great for our economy.
Absolutely. Just from my position, I work with a portfolio of mine are mostly small community banks, and just having to shift their mindset, especially preparing for 1071 or the changes with CRA, some of that change stuff to where they've not had to do anything for so long. And now here we are, we're going to have to, some of them are having to create all new roles to prepare for this. We're all having to learn these new guidelines and rules and making sure that we're doing things correctly. And just from my position, being able to help decipher and understand all of that, like you said, thousands of pages, the bulk of information that is around and involved in all of this is kind of mind-boggling if you can't take it one bite at a time. And so I fully agree with the amount of everything going on and what they're questioning, because again, from a community bank standpoint, we understand that people are asking for this information. And so it's interesting to hear how that you are kind of expecting that to kind of, yes, we do need those regulations, but to kind of back things down and maybe come at it from a more realistic standpoint. Is that what I'm understanding you to say?
That is absolutely what I hope to see. I mean, again, yeah. You get back to exactly what you noted. Community banks in particular, where they're adding personnel to the compliance piece. It's, again, going through and checking the box on all of this, but is that furthering fair lending? Is that furthering lending at all and furthering opportunity? It's a legitimate question to ask. And we're in a place now where we can actually ask those questions and look at them and say, does this make sense? Really putting more boots on the ground into communities to do the lending activity, to have the credit engagement, to have the nonprofit engagement. That's the piece that perhaps is getting lost when you've got people in a back room just looking at data and checking the boxes to make sure they understand what data they're sending to the regulators and that they've met all of those specific requirements on that. It's a massive undertaking. And again, I guess I question, and others do, is that actually furthering fair lending? And how do we do that as a country? That is a great opportunity. And look, the technology available to us today has dramatically changed since a lot of these laws were initially put in place in the 1970s. So that is also a whole other angle to this. I recognize that, you know, we do not want, nor in fair lending, you don't want black boxes making decisions, But there is a question to be asked here of what technology can do to help facilitate and put data in a better, better place that is going to make sense for the decision maker, rather than having a whole bunch of things be manual and require human intervention. I mean, there's all of that too. AI is really going to be able to show us things that we cannot, basically put together ourselves. But that doesn't mean we're outsourcing the decision making. That doesn't mean you're outsourcing legal responsibilities. But there, I think, is a lot more opportunity to be open to what innovations that technology can provide to us and the insights that it can show.
Absolutely. We had a guest on, Frank Lazario. He spoke about AI and how he's used it in his realm, and that's kind of been his niche area. And so it was very interesting to hear from him on how he, just like you just said, it can aid in so much. And then we've had someone else on that was a specialist with specifically fintech compliance. And she really dug into, like you said, you have to go in and weigh the risk of these relationships. And is it helping us achieve the goal that we are working towards? But also, do we know enough intimately about this fintech as far as from a compliance standpoint to comfortably be able to paint that picture to regulators when they do come in and ask questions? So there are some banks out there and some professionals that I do think that that's their goal. Like they're ready to start having and using the technology that we do have, but they're having to work around and navigate this regulatory environment that we're under. And just the uncertainty, I feel like, around AI, that I feel like people are a little in banking and from a regulatory standpoint they're just a little nervous about it because it is unknown.
No, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, you mentioned the fintech road to go down, and I think it's a good example, again, of perhaps a right-hand, left-hand disconnect. I mean, in the last 4 years, on the one hand, you have the prudential regulators really drilling down and frankly, having a posture where they're discouraging banks from working with third-party vendors at all. And yes, there is absolutely a risk to every connection. But you think about the risk of not offering some of these capabilities to your customers in the digital banking space when they expect it. What does that do in terms of the bank's viability? You know, if you're not offering those things, you're not going to be with the marketplace and what with consumers' expectations. Okay, so you've only got a small team at this bank and this institution. So what expectations can you at least in contract, put very clearly in place, this is what we expect of the fintech, but how do you audit it? How deep do you go when you're a small institution? So the choice is to not have a partnership at all, but to have a partnership with a bank that's been vetted by, say, your trade association, that's been vetted by other bankers working with that bank. You know, what? How much can you rely on? How much do you have to do yourself? Again, it's a legitimate question. It's a risk management question in large part. But discouraging that engagement because they're saying, yeah, unless basically you put yourself in their shoes and accept all the risk of a third party company and understand everything about how they operate and everything about who they are, I mean, maybe these expectations don't make sense. On the other hand, we have the CFPB putting out a final rule on 1033 that really does not give the same level of responsibility to those fintech partners. And banks are just supposed to allow them to have access to consumers' data and their banking data and proprietary data in a way that is creating security risks. Again, the right hand, left hand, do those things both make sense at the same time? I can tell you my answer pretty clearly is no. So what is it that we are trying to achieve here? And do we understand that interconnectedness of a lot of these rules and examination posture and the future of banking and the future of business? So those are the things that really would benefit from a step back and a true examination.
Absolutely. This conversation has been great, Kathy. And I want to tell everybody to join us next week as we finish it. And for our listeners, this is Banking Matters.